Change the words. Make me blind. Chapter 15. Kara did not see her son again. She did not hear about him, nor did she hear any rumors about the Lord Jarl having secured himself an heir. She didn't hear anything at all, and, after far less time than she would have expected, she simply stopped thinking of him at all. The first time she had seen Dahlia after the boy's birth, she had refused to meet the other woman's eye. Though she knew, though they both knew, the decision to omit Dahlia from the event had never been Kara's to make. She couldn't conceal the guilt that wriggled its worm-like way through her at the sight of Dahlia's bright-eyed, expectant face. Nor could she conceal the piercing pain, far more heart-stopping than anything the birthing process itself could have produced, that had stabbed through her chest at the irrepressible hope touching Dahlia's voice when she asked about the child. "It's a boy," Kara had said. It was far more of a struggle than it should have been to keep her voice toneless, though she knew it would need to be that way for a long time. The boy was no longer hers, and she would not allow herself to miss him, much less pretend she had any claim over him. "The Lord Jarl has his heir," she went on, then closed her eyes. She could not bear the look in Dahlia's eyes, or the unconcealed feeling radiating outwards from her, and so she turned away. "My duty is done." Dahlia came up behind her, and Kara couldn't quite suppress the groan that ripped from her at the feel of strong and familiar arms snaking around her waist and sure, knowing hands resting flat upon her empty belly. She fought back a grimace, loss mingled with warmth, and tried not to relish too much the way Dahlia felt when she was wrapped around her like this, tender and forgiving and not quite sorrowful. The embrace was so many things that Maud Sith should never be, but which were everything Kara needed just then, and she fought to keep from allowing herself the luxury of drowning in it. "You must be so proud," Dahlia said, lips tracing the curve of Kara's ear, and Kara felt her eyelids fluttering despite herself. "You have born and birthed the future Lord Jarl. You alone, Kara." "It is a great honour," Kara affirmed, losing herself in the caress of Dahlia's leather-covered fingertips across the sudden unfamiliar flatness of her midsection. "He was a very good child. He cried loudly and with great strength, as though he hated all the world." She sighed, and the touch of Dahlia's lips shifted to something softer. "He will grow into a good fighter, and he will serve Dahara well." "Of course he will," Dahlia agreed, humming. "He is your son." They didn't speak of him again after that, and Kara allowed the sorrow to disappear into the abandoned recesses of wasted humanity that lay neglected and unwanted in the back of her mind. There was no place for maternal instincts in the heart of a Maud Sith, and Kara didn't really know what had led her to feel anything more than duty to the infant anyway. All she knew was that it had made her heart ache in a way she couldn't quite comprehend, to see the child taken away from her, and that it had lashed more fiercely than a dozen Aegils when she had returned to her chambers, and to Dahlia, without him. She didn't mention any of these things to Dahlia, though she knew the other woman sensed them in her. She knew that, if she dared voice them aloud, she would be met with empathy and understanding, and countless other such worthless sentiments, so unbecoming of a Maud Sith, and so decidedly Dahlia. And she simply could not bear that. She couldn't bear to know that Dahlia felt the loss just as strongly as she did, or that it might be anything other than utterly unacceptable to feel the way she did. She didn't want her weaknesses embraced. She wanted them discarded. She wanted to forget that any of this had ever happened. By the time the rumors started circulating about a seeker of truth, no more than a half year later, the boy had been all but forgotten. It hadn't surprised Kara at all that the Lord Jarl had personally selected Denna for the task of capturing and training the Seeker. Denna was still his right hand, and there had been talk that he had finally granted her unuttered wish of gracing his bed once his interest in Kara and a few of their mutual sisters had finally waned. And she was the natural choice for such a high-profile task. As much disdain as Kara felt for the paler blonde, she had never doubted Denna's success in doing exactly what the Lord Jarl had expected of her. In Denna's hands, The Seeker's breaking was, of course, inevitable. Nobody who valued their life could have anticipated that Mistress Denna would fail. Kara didn't see her again after that. She knew the woman was still alive, because the Lord Jarl wasn't nearly frivolous enough to have killed one so valuable to him as Denna was. No doubt, he'd have the perfect purpose for his failed right hand sometime in the future. Still, for the time being, Denna's presence, and with it her prestigious title, disappeared from the temples after her failure. It was, Kara couldn't help thinking, a just punishment for one so swollen on her own self-merit. The news was good for Kara, who climbed with lightning speed through what few ranks had stood between herself and the coveted position at Lord Jarl's side. She would not, she knew, replace Denna, for nobody could, but she knew she was closer to it than any of her other sisters could have ever dreamed of. Lord Jarl was uncharacteristically kind towards Kara, professionally and personally, though she had not been given the honour of servicing him sexually since he had grown bored with her. He was closer to generous, never quite actually forgiving, but certainly more liable to turn a blind eye to her few trespasses than he was to any of her sisters, however well-behaved they otherwise were, than she had ever believed him capable of. Not even Denna had escaped the Lord Jarl's wrath, when he was caught in the fit of a temper, whether it was her fault or not. Nonetheless, and as much to Kara's own surprise as her sister's, he chose, for the most part, to restrain himself when Kara was the one left alone to appease his temper. Perhaps it was a lingering appreciation of her having provided him with a son that caused him to be less ferocious to her than he had been her predecessors, and indeed to her equals. But Kara sincerely doubted that. Truthfully, she suspected it was rather more to do with the way she, unlike her peers, was willing to stand up to him when necessary. Denna had been powerful, more so than Kara would ever have admitted to her face, but her definition of service had differed greatly from Kara's own. In Denna's eyes, duty was defined by blind obedience. Kara, by contrast, saw it as much a part of her duty to inform the Lord Jarl that his plans were riddled with holes, as it was to nod and acquiesce and do his bidding. If he told her to obey him in spite of her arguments, she would do so without hesitation or the least complaint. But she would do so knowing that her advice had been given first, and, if she failed him, which she never did, the Lord Jarl would know that she had advised him of its possibility. He appreciated her honesty, she was sure, if not her unwillingness to comply lemming-like with every command he issued. It was a fine line between offering helpful advice and questioning his authority, and Kara walked that line with more grace and poise than any of her sisters, before or since. It was only a couple of weeks after Denna failed for the second time, this time in obtaining the third box of Orden from the Seeker and his friends, a failure that was met with as much amusement from Kara as it was with fury from the Lord Jarl, that Kara was entrusted with the task of storming the island of Valaria. The murmurings about a male confessor child had been spreading for some time, but Lord Jarl had for a long time swept them aside in deference to his pursuit of the boxes of Orden, with Denna's failure in the latter task still a bleeding welt upon his pride. The Lord Jarl finally seemed to think it prudent to switch his attention to the matter of the rumoured male confessor, and Kara was instructed to obtain the child at all costs. The confessors, she was told, she could kill or torture as she so desired. Kara relished the task, and not just because of the status it represented. She hated confessors, hated the fact that their power was the one thing in the world she could neither prepare for nor fight against. Death by confession was, in Kara's opinion, the worst possible death there was. Dying in agony, pain beyond repression, was bad enough. But dying under the thrall of a confessor's power, breathing her last tortured breath in worship and supplication to the woman who had ended her life. Pain was little threat to a Morge Sith, though Kara had heard that the agony of confession was a pain like no other. But the humiliation, the shame of a death steeped not in battle but in mindless adoration, a death where her last breath would be one of unconditional love. It soured Kara's stomach just to think of it. She hadn't planned on allowing Dahlia to go with her to Valaria. Quite the contrary, in fact. An island filled with confessors was no place for the weak. And Kara had convinced herself, despite all possible evidence to the contrary, that Dahlia was simply not a strong enough fighter for the task that lay before them. It was, of course, a fabrication, though nobody needed to know that. In truth, she did not want to risk seeing Dahlia confessed. Of all her sisters, Dahlia was the one that Kara believed least deserving of that particular death. And, selfishly, she knew that she could not bear to witness it. Dahlia, to nobody's surprise, had other ideas. "You will, of course," she said, as though her word was law, "be taking me with you." Kara chuckled. "You know that won't happen, Dahlia," she chided, gentle but decisive. Dahlia shook her head, and her expression spoke volumes of her intent. "I'm not asking permission, Kara," she said, as though she were addressing a very small child. "I will be going, whether by invitation or otherwise. We have served together, been together, for too many years now, Kara. All our lives, practically. You can't deny me the chance to be there when you achieve this, the pinnacle of your station. I have earned the right to stand by your side, just as you've earned the right to stand by the Lord Ralph's. You cannot deny me this." "I most certainly can," Kara snapped at her, not liking the way she was already more than halfway convinced by her friend's honey-smooth words. "But you won't," Dahlia returned pointedly. "Will you?" If she lived to be 1,000 years old, Kara would never know why she acquiesced instead of disciplining Dahlia for her insolence. As it was, she tried not to think about it too much. If she dared to think, she would realize that she had been making allowances like this for her entire life, that the rock-solid foundation of strength and fortitude she'd built herself on was inherently cracked and flawed where Dahlia was involved. If she dared to think about it, even for a moment, she would realize that Dahlia was making her weak. "Very well," she said instead. Not wanting to dwell on it, she lay waste to those thoughts entirely by making sure that Dahlia expressed her gratitude that evening, in many pleasurable ways, and over the course of a great many hours. When Kara started babbling about an important child, Kaelin naturally assumed that she was talking about the one she'd carried and birthed herself. It was only after a few excruciatingly long minutes of blissful misinterpretation, when Kara let slip the word Valaria, that the truth of what was going on became apparent, and Kaelin's blood ran so cold that she actually began to shiver from the chill of it. She couldn't watch this. Not now. Not this. Not the knee. Feeling as though she'd been struck with something so much more potent than an angel, Kaelin scrambled to her feet. She wasn't entirely sure what good it would do, but she simply couldn't sit still a moment longer. She couldn't be holding Kara now, couldn't be touching her, couldn't bring herself to be anywhere near her. Not if she was about to bear witness to what her sinking heart told her that she was. Though she'd come to terms a long time ago with what Kara had done to Denis, she wasn't sure she had strength enough within her to see it played out before her eyes, like a twisted puppet show. Why hadn't Zed warned her about this? He had warned her about everything, the potential for pain, suffering and sex in near equal measure, all reflected 100-fold in the spell-blinded eyes of a woman she cared so deeply for. But for all his foresight, he hadn't warned her of this. He hadn't warned her about her own sister. He had said a great many things, Kaelin knew, but not once had he even hinted that she might be forced to witness the brutal, heartless slaughter of her sister, of Denis, at Kara's hands. Kara had been heartbreakingly honest in describing what she'd done to Denis. She had tortured her, broken her again and again, made her suffer beyond suffering, and all for the crime of being a confessor. She had admitted, freely and truthfully, that the measures she'd taken, so far beyond cruelty, had had nothing to do with Denis's choice to drown her son before allowing Darken Rahl to bend the child to his purposes, and everything to do with Kara's bitter hatred for confessors. Some part of Kaelin had been grateful for the honesty, but that part had been overshadowed for many weeks by the reeling, violent desire to kill Kara in her sleep for what she'd done to her sister. She could have made it quick and painless, could have granted Denise the respite of a swift death, if she had to kill her at all. But she hadn't. She had dragged it out, so she'd explained in great detail, and made it so much more than excruciating. The admission of the killing had, all on its own, been enough to send Kaelan into the Kondar, and she'd very nearly destroyed Kara with her bare hands, even before she even came to learn just how deeply the torture had run. And then again, when she'd learned exactly what Kara had done to Denise, if Richard hadn't stopped her, if he hadn't insisted on putting at a pitiful Maud Sith on trial instead of allowing her to be confessed, as the people of Stowcroft had requested when she'd returned to her one-time home, Kara would have been dead long before now, and Kaelan would have been glad of it. She could not relive that pain now, couldn't let herself sit idly by and bear witness as Kara did all those things again, first-hand this time. She couldn't, if she did, if she was forced to watch every last horrific moment of what she knew Kara had done to Denise before she'd let her die. Kaelan wasn't sure she would be able to keep herself from going into the Kondar once again. And, if she did, if she lost herself to the rage that she could already feel bubbling beneath the surface of herself, this time there would be no Richard to protect Kara, or to save her from the death it would bring with it. Slowly, she found herself inching towards the door, creeping backwards, still unable to tear her gaze away from Kara. She would call for Zed, she decided. She would order him to end the spell right now, force him to drag Kara out of it, if that was what he needed to do, and damn the so-called consequences, whatever they were, whatever damage they might cause, permanent or otherwise. It would still be less than the irreparable harm if she went into the blood rage and blindly slaughtered or confessed every living soul, guilty or otherwise, within 10 leagues. Yes, she would call for Zed and demand that he fix this. But, as hard as she tried, she simply couldn't bring herself to open the door. Her fingers rested on the familiar contours of the rough wood, applying some kind of pressure that wasn't nearly enough, and she urged herself to just push it open and be done with it. Just push the door open, her screaming heart cried. Step out into the hallway, call for Zed, and end this nonsense. Now, before Kara started to remember the massacre at Valaria. Now, damn it. She needed to, she knew. To move, to breathe, to leave, to do anything that would grant her freedom from what she knew would come next. But she was frozen to the spot, as though in the throes of the same spell that had afflicted Kara. She could no more tear herself away, however desperately she wanted to, than Kara could wake herself up and end it all herself before it reached the point of no return. Kaelan was helpless, locked up tight in the thrall of a power so great that she could neither define nor fight it, and could do nothing but stand there, transfixed in paralyzed horror, and pray to the Creator who had long since abandoned them both, that Kara's memory would be merciful and skip ahead to a moment less likely to end them both. There were very few things in the world that could strike real fear into the heart of a Maud Sith, and all the more so when that Maud Sith was as hardened as Kara. In all the time since joining the Sisters of the Aegil, she had never known the embrace of true fear. Fear was a weakness, something that foolish little girls felt before they allowed themselves to be enlightened by their true calling. Fear was a sign of small-minded cowardice, an unforgivable sin that ended without fail in punishment. Fear was something that no Maud Sith worth her leathers would ever, under any circumstances, allow to claim her. Or so it was, until a confessor was involved. Then, suddenly, it became a tool for survival. Kara was not afraid as she stepped off the boat and onto Valaria. She was certainly not frightened, but even she was apprehensive. Uneasy. Perhaps even genuinely nervous. The penalty for failure here were far greater than simply displeasing the Lord Jarl. Failure here would be death for them all, and the very worst kind of death. Failure here, more than ever, was simply not an option. Thankfully, in this particular instance, the confessors were woefully outnumbered, with barely one between three of the invading Maud Sith. Kara had taken all possible precautions to ensure her party's success, and graciously allowed her sisters to entertain themselves with the scattered handful of surviving confessors as they so desired, so long as they didn't grow too careless. It was good, she had learned, to indulge those beneath her, to let them enjoy themselves. Allowing them their pleasures would yield greater loyalty over the course of her reign. She herself wasted no time on such frivolities, flanked on one side by Dahlia and on the other by a similarly ranked sister known as Triana. She went immediately after the child's mother. "Where's the boy?" Kara demanded, not really expecting a reply. She could feel the pulse of bloodlust roaring through the veins of her two companions. Triana, in particular, was fast growing infamous for her insatiable thirst for violence. And Kara was very much looking forward to seeing that hunger put to good use here. But now was not the time. They needed answers first. Torture could come afterwards. And so, grudgingly, but with the mission's success at the front of her mind, she warned both of her two eager sisters back with a businesslike glare. "You know she won't answer you," Triana growled, and Kara could taste her disdain like bitter wine on her tongue. Apparently, she did not appreciate being told to curb her appetites. She would sooner die than surrender her precious child. You know that. Their victim, the mother of the child they sought, smirked, a sheen of false bravado covering over the obvious uneasiness. "And they say Maud Sith are stupid," she said scathingly. Dahlia cracked her smartly across the face with her agile. Had it been Triana, Kara would probably have berated her for not standing back when she'd been instructed to. But this was Dahlia. They both knew that she would not be chastised for this or for anything else. "You were asked a question," she said calmly, and Kara felt a wall of pride erect itself around the part of her that knew she should have been eking out discipline. "Now answer it." "He's dead," the woman informed them, still smiling though Kara could see the edges of the expression cracking ever so slightly now. It wasn't unease that the confessor was covering over so expertly, Kara realized with a growing sense of unease that marked itself by a familiar churning within her. It wasn't fear and it wasn't anxiety. It was grief. "I killed him myself," the mother went on. "Now do as you want, you monsters. Kill us all, it won't matter. You'll still have failed." A low growl rumbled somewhere deep inside Kara's chest. Her first mission as Darken Ral's most trusted Maud Sith, and she had failed through no fault of her own. She would make this confessor pay for that, and she would make it last. Not blinking, she raised her agile, eyes fixed purposefully on the woman's, wanting to see every drop of fear as it bled from her, to hear the delicious screams of agony as they were wrenched unbidden from that place deep inside that confessors had been taught from birth to deny existed. "You will suffer for this," she snarled, teetering on the knife edge of control. "You will know pain, the likes of which your pathetic kind cannot comprehend, much less endure." Her two companions broke into twin smiles at that. Kara knew from repeated experience exactly how enticing Dahlia found this particular side of her, and it caused her pulse to increase just slightly, to see that hungry grin reflected in the eyes of the feral-hearted Triana as well, where she stood at her other side. Surrounded as she was by such unabashed appreciation, Kara felt the bloodlust flare up in her until it was blinding, and she drew back her fist to echo the blow that Dahlia had just delivered. Something in the woman's too stoic face stopped her. Later, she would tell herself that it was a flicker of doubt, the ghost of an idea that she might not have been telling the truth, that perhaps the boy was still alive and hidden somewhere. Every rational bone in her body insisted that the notion was beyond absurd, but she shoved them aside in deference to the rippling assurance that told her caution was the card best played here. It made no sense, but Kara heeded it nonetheless. Illogical as it probably was, that must have been what had stilled her hand. It could not have been anything else. Kara's ruthless dedication to both duty and cruelty were renowned throughout the territories, and her erotic lust for being appreciated by her underlings was even more so, with both so intimately close to her at that moment, the promise of violence before her, and the panting breaths of anticipation warming her neck from the women flanking her on either side. She could not immediately recall a time when her blood had run more wantonly than it did now, and yet she simply could not bring herself to move. "Kara," Dahlia murmured in her ear, breath hot and voice hotter. "What is it?" "Perhaps she's merely taking a moment to prepare herself," Triana remarked wryly. Her voice was sharp in all the places where Dahlia's was soft, and Kara's adult mind was suddenly filled to bursting with visions of them both bowing their braided heads in stuttering worship of her private parts. "Go," she heard herself grind out, voice almost too rough to make out even through the island's breezy silence. "Look for the child. Leave no stone unturned. If she's lying, if the boy is still alive and hidden somewhere, I want him found." "I shall order Mistress Nairi to do the task," Triana said smoothly, unconsciously wetting her lips, as her gaze ran the length of Kara's agile with indecent rapture. "She's having far too much amusement with this one's mate anyway." "No," Kara snarled, not tearing her gaze from the confessor, and not even because of the risk of death if she did. "I did not order Mistress Nairi to do it. I gave the order to you." She forced a benevolent smile through her inner conflict. "I want the task done well. Enthusiastic as I have no doubt Nairi is, finding a hidden infant is not the same as whoring oneself out to the nearest available source of semi-functional anatomy. I do not want to risk our dear sister being distracted from her task. I trust your diligence far more than I trust hers. Go now, and do not leave me disappointed." The corners of Triana's lips curled up at that, and she nodded her assent. As she departed, Dahlia quirked a confused eyebrow at Kara. "Do you not trust her?" she asked, quiet but confused. "Of course I do," Kara replied. Then, without so much as a moment's hesitation, added, "Go with her. Help her find the child." "What?" Dahlia spluttered. "I didn't come here to search for imaginary infants. You and I both know this woman is telling the truth. Why would you send me?" "Because it is my order," Kara replied simply. Dahlia stared at her, slack-jawed. But Kara made it clear by the look of concentrated fury on her face that she was in no mood to be argued with. Not even by the one person who could ordinarily get away with it. And Dahlia finally acquiesced to do as she was told, slinking off after Triana without another word. Kara knew there would be an exchange of words when they got back to the temple, and probably an exchange of blows as well. Dahlia was far more than merely chastened by the task given to her, and would voice her feelings in vivid colours on Kara's face the moment they were in private. But she couldn't bring herself to care just then. She had a task to finish, and it would be easier if she were left alone to see it done. Again, this time without her audience, she raised her agile. And again, she found herself unable to bring it down on the confessor's more than deserving skull. The woman looked up at her, not merely fearless now, but actually courageous. More courageous, in fact, than Kara had ever expected a gutless confessor would be capable of in any circumstance. The mocking smirk was still on her face, though the ragged edges, the touches of sorrow and pain and regret, nothing like fear, were growing ever more pronounced with every moment that passed. Kara knew those lines well, and, as she studied them with far greater intimacy than she needed to, realization cracked like lightning across her field of vision. And she knew beyond all doubt exactly what it was that kept stilling her hand. She had seen that look before. She had seen it, and denied it had ever existed, burning too much like tears behind the mask of her own features, as she'd gazed into the looking-glass, scarcely a few hours after Denna, always so efficient, had taken the Lord Ral's child to his chambers. Already back in her standard-issue leathers, every inch the picture of a flawless Mod Sith, just as she had been before the child had taken up residence in her womb. She had fought back the emptiness, the loneliness, and the sorrow. She had fought back everything, willed herself to pretend nothing had ever happened, and returned to the life she had lived before. All those things she saw now, equally denied, in the eyes of the male confessor's mother, those eyes so unlike her own. "You will be killed," she said, hating the sudden indefinable thickness of her voice. She felt no sympathy for this woman, this confessor, this hated enemy of Maud Seth. She knew that, if she turned her back for less than a second, she'd find herself confessed, dying in agony, whispering breathless words of supplication to her. She hated her, truly and deeply, beyond the rational and beyond humanity. She hated her, and would delight in her death. She would kill her and enjoy it, but she could not bring herself to torture her. The woman had, after all, been tortured enough. In itself the thought was sickening, the sentiment, so dangerously close to emotion that it reeked of, was sickening. This was not her. It was not the Kara that Dahlia and Triana had gazed upon with such lusty adoration, and it was not the Kara that they would both fall upon and worship like the deity she was the instant they returned to their temple. This was not the person she had spent her entire life striving to become. This person, this pathetic coward, unable even to torture one of her most hated enemies, unable to see justice done against the confessor, the very confessor who had caused her to fail for the first time in her life. This woman was no Maud Sith. She was a pitiful heathen, worthless, useless. She was a weak, feeling-driven child, an infant, a crying, mewling, helpless infant. She was fighting back tears that should never have existed, unshed for a boy that should never have been conceived. Whoever this pitiful woman was, she decided, she was a product of this island, this hated island filled with confessors. She was a victim of confession. She would make sure, when they were done here, when all the confessors were dead, that this woman that was not Kara would be slaughtered too. Nobody would ever know about this moment of unforgivable weakness. Nobody would ever know, because the one witness to it was about to be slain at her hand. "Get on with it, then," the confessor snapped. Kara clenched her jaw, her fist, every muscle in her body. "I will make it quick." Kaelin let out a strangled whimper. This was wrong. Everything about it was wrong. She remembered vividly the night Kara had told her the details of what had taken place on Valaria. To her credit, what little of it there was, Kara hadn't been proud, but she had been excruciatingly honest about it, and she had stated in no uncertain terms that the knee had suffered horribly at her hands, that she had made sure of it. She had wanted vengeance, vengeance against the entire race of confessors, and against the knee in particular, for having caused her to fail in her duty to Darkendral. It had been violent and bloody, a fact confirmed several months later by the knee herself, after Denna had returned her to the land of the living, in the body of a prostitute. Something that, when the initial shock and pain and euphoria had worn off, had struck both sisters as hilarious in its irony. Kara had kept her distance, Kaelin remembered, and the look on Denny's face whenever she'd glanced upon the Maud Sith had chilled Kaelin to her very soul. It was one of the main reasons why Kaelin had taken so long to accept that her feelings for Kara were changing, that she was no longer seeing the woman as the soulless monster who had done those things to her sister. She'd remembered the look on Denny's face when she looked at Kara, and the conflict she'd felt in that moment had scarred for a very long time. Apparently, it was different in the other world, apparently, and the thought caused a dagger of pain to pierce her heart. Dahlia's Kara had been blessed with empathy, and had been kind to Denis. It wouldn't, she knew, change the end result, but it would mean that Denis hadn't suffered, that somewhere out there, in one of so many countless worlds, there was a Denis who had died swiftly and painlessly. Kaelin had expected to want Kara dead after being forced to watch this, but she didn't. As much pain as it caused to know that, as she stood there watching, Kara was in her own mind killing Denis with her bare hands. It eased her troubled soul to know that she was doing it with honour. And it hurt, more deeply than she'd ever admit in the moment when her thoughts should have been so exclusively with her sister. To know that Kara had again been right in thinking that her own life had been a soulless one, by comparison to what it could have been with Dahlia in it. Never, in all the time they'd known each other, had Kaelin thought even for a moment that Kara might have ever been anything more or less than what she was. And never, not even once, after learning what she'd done to Denis, had she thought that there might be a Kara somewhere who had found it within herself to be merciful. "I don't know you," she heard herself whisper, her breathing shaky. It wasn't the first time she'd said it, but this time it held a completely different meaning than it had before, so many hours ago that she could barely even remember it by this point. This time, it wasn't Kara's true heartlessness she was seeing for the first time. It was her true heart. Where she sat, Kara pulled back, and Kaelin was surprised to see that she was shivering. It wasn't the trembling of emotional exhaustion that she herself had been victim to for almost longer than she could remember. Nor was it the shuddering of physical strain that had racked Kara's body so many times before now. For a variety of reasons, whatever it was most definitely something she hadn't seen in Kara before, and, as hard as she tried, she couldn't define it. Part of her wanted to go back to the Maud Sith's side and pull her once more into her arms, kiss her hair, soothe her, hold her until the shaking had subsided completely. But another part of her, for the moment the larger part, was still racked with hurt over having witnessed once again the death of her sister at Kara's blood-soaked hands. It was different this time, she knew, so completely different, but it was still fundamentally the same. It was still the brutal and cold-blooded murder of Denis, of Kaelin's only sister, and, though it didn't bring out the Kondar as she had feared it might, the pain it caused was still very real. And, as much as she wanted to be there for Kara, she could not bring herself to offer the comfort she knew her friend needed just then, even though she herself needed it just as badly. It hurt too much. "It had to be done," Kara breathed, so close to broken. "I know," Kaelin replied softly, and let her tears fall. Kara insisted on leaving Valaria as swiftly as possible after that. None of her sisters seemed to mind the command when it came, several even going so far as to readily affirm that they'd grown bored of playing with the corpses of so many filthy confessors. They returned to the people's palace together, accomplished in the slaughter they drained down upon the island, but empty-handed and knowing that all the dead confessors in the world would not assuage the wrath of Darkan Rhaal when he found out that his prize had been denied him. Their party was large, seeming all the more so for the knowledge that they had not sustained a single fatality on their side. But the punishment, they all knew, would be for Kara to endure alone. She had led the mission, and it had been her responsibility, not any of the others, to ensure its success. To her surprise, Lord Rhaal was merciful, actually merciful, not simply taking on the appearance of it. He didn't order that she be hung over the blood pit for failing to obtain the boy. Nor did he order it done to any of her sisters, for allowing the failure. He did not raise his voice or berate Kara for not having achieved what she had promised. Nor did he do any of the countless things she had anticipated and prepared herself for. He was, when all was said and done, surprisingly accepting of her explanation, and dismissed her with a curt nod and a few short words of appreciation, honest, actual appreciation, for having destroyed the confessors so efficiently. Surprised but grateful, Kara had thanked him for his mercy, and thought no more of it. Less than 2 days later, Dahlia was relocated, sent away to one of the most remote temples in all of the Midlands. Kara, as she found herself flooded with unfamiliar and unwanted emptiness, realized that punishment did not always come in the form of physical abuse. It was a clever punishment, to be sure, and one that Kara supposed she should have anticipated, but, through sheer stubbornness and unwillingness to bend, coupled perhaps with a desperate desire to banish those feelings that had been surfacing within her ever since the birth of the child, She refused to let it affect her. She moved on with haste, casting Dahlia from her mind. Dahlia and her infectious lips and her talented tongue, and the way she always knew exactly how to offer Kara the comfort that she neither wanted nor needed, but which she relished nonetheless. Dahlia, with her endless pleasures and her willingness to submit just enough to make Kara feel more powerful than anyone else in the world. Dahlia, cast like a cobweb from Kara's mind, as though she'd never been there. Within less than a week, she had taken Triana to her bed. The transition was a difficult one to adapt to, but Kara excelled in adjustment, and soon came to appreciate Triana for her own breed of diligence. Triana was rough and untamed. She refused to yield or submit or allow Kara those flashes of authority that she had enjoyed so frequently with Dahlia. She refused to do as she was instructed, and yet she managed to always leave Kara satisfied in spite of that refusal, and being so much more aggressive in every way, demanded the same satisfaction in kind. Triana, unlike Dahlia, would not allow herself to be denied, and Kara found herself addicted to the give and take of what they shared, every bit as much as she had been addicted to Dahlia's unconditional submission. It was different, at times confusing, but Kara certainly wasn't complaining. The change would be good for her, she decided. She needed to be free of willingness and compassion, free of the countless bad habits she'd overlooked in Dahlia for too many years. It was a cleansing, a purging of the weakness within herself, the weakness that had caused her to spare a confessor the suffering she so deserved. If this was to be Kara's punishment, she would take it as a lesson as well. She would learn great things, she was sure, from the unique services that Triana offered, and she would come out all the more powerful for them. Within a matter of weeks, Dahlia had been cast to the very furthest recesses of her mind. By the time those weeks had spread out into months, and Lord Jarl summoned Kara and her sisters with news that the Seeker of Truth had somehow obtained all 3 boxes of Orden, and the Book of Counted Shadows required to use them, even that tiny corner of her mind had been filled with duty and honour and Triana. When she was instructed by Lord Jarl to do whatever it took to obliterate the Seeker, Kara did so with not a single thought in her mind of the old friend she had shared so much of her life with. Dahlia may have only been relocated to the other side of the Empire, but, to Kara, she was dead. At long last, her thoughts were free of the troubled pain that had tickled at their edges for so long, the alien sentiments and undesired longing. She was free at last, of all the things that had made her weak and helpless and desperate, all the things that were so unlike the Maud Sith she knew herself to be. If it was a punishment, she couldn't help thinking, it was most certainly a rewarding one. Finally, she was free from the softness of Dahlia's influence. Her mind was a blank slate once more, cut loose from the fetters of feeling, and, this time, she would not allow it to be tainted.